Well, that was a fun couple hours. Now we're going to talk about something pretty darn serious, anxiety and how it affects you. That's right. Dr. David Hanscom back with us. And we'll be back with David in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Dr. David Hanscom was with me about a year and a half ago. Top orthopedic spine surgeon in Seattle. He developed an approach for treating chronic pain that has helped hundreds of patients become pain-free without surgery, author of Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain, David Hanscom on Coast to Coast. David, welcome back. Good to have you.
Hi, George. I'm very excited to be back. This is great.
So I had a friend of mine today. We went to a little restaurant. He's a ring announcer here in the Midwestern area, plus he owns his own insurance company. And he's driving in with me in my car, and he tries to get out, and he said he felt like he was 95 years old, just trying to get out of his car. What's happening to somebody like that, David? Because I think it's happening all over the place.
Well, one of the reasons that back problems are such a big problem as far as disability is that it hurts. I've had two back surgeries myself. I've been impressed for many, many years is that what happens, something gives in your back, whether it's a muscle, tendon, ligament, something small can happen. It's not very large. And the muscles spasm around it, and the muscles surrounding the spine are very, very large. They're strong. And when they spasm, it feels like there's just an axe in your back. And I've been through it myself many times. But, yeah, back problems hurt. And it's not the problem is it's not usually anything serious. In other words, just a pull muscle, something relatively small, but the pain just feels terrible. So you feel like you're going through something serious, but very, very rarely is it actually serious.
Does stress and anxiety hurt your back?
Well, it depends if you're talking about chronic pain or acute pain. Well, they did a very, very interesting study that I just became aware of last month. That there's a group out of Chicago that looks at a test called a functional MRI scan. And what the test is that they inject a glucose dye into your veins. It goes into your brain. And the MRI scan can pick up which parts of the brain are more active than others. So, for instance, when you strain your back, like you just described, there's a pain center that lights up that's very consistent in a very certain spot. There's a very specific part of the brain. So they studied a group of patients who had pain less than 2 months, and the pain center lit up. Then they studied another group that had back pain for 10 years or more, and another part of the brain lit up that was the emotional center. In other words, the pain center went dead, and the emotional center lit up. Then they took the acute patients, less than 2 months of pain, and study them every 3 months, and by 12 months, the ones that became chronic has shifted to the emotional part of the brain. In other words, chronic pain is completely different than acute pain.
Now, let's talk a little bit about anxiety, because you know you've studied that too. Exactly, first of all, what is anxiety?
Well, there's different words for it. There's fear, just feeling to be nervous. I use a word progression of nervousness, worry, anxiety, fear, paranoia, and terror. I mean, there's a range of those type of emotions. But it's a survival response. I look at anxiety actually as a mental reflex, not psychological. So something causes anxiety. Your body is instantly designed to react just to protect yourself. So what happens is it's essentially a pathways issue, just like pain pathways are.
Okay, now let's tear that down a little bit more. What causes the stress and anxiety? If people just lose it, or what adds to that?
Well, humans have a problem. In other words, if an animal is threatened by a predator, et cetera, why it automatically reacts with anxiety or fear and goes to a fight or flight response. What's different about humans is that we have consciousness. So just thoughts of threat will cause your body to respond in that same physiological way. So what's hard about anxiety that feels like it's emotional is that it causes a chemical reaction that causes your body to be tense. The blood supply to your muscles increase. The blood supply to your brain actually decreases in anxiety because your blood supply is supposed to go to the muscles to help you flee. But humans have a problem. Just the thought of a threat actually causes that same avoidance response.
Now, when people have these kinds of issues, and you're talking about, hey, no surgery, how does that happen? I don't happen to be a fan of back surgery myself, but
I know. Well, it's interesting. Like, go back to the original study where actually pain, chronic pain, lives in the emotional part of the brain. It's the same part of the brain that anxiety is processed. So what we now understand is that mental pain and physical pain are processed in pretty much the same part of the brain. So we view mental pain and physical pain essentially as the same entity. So when indeed we actually drop down anxiety, why the physical pain also drops down and vice versa. So they're very, very closely connected. And that's where we start doing surgery for emotional pain. Surgery really helps acute pain when the pain center's on. But when you have emotional or mental pain, surgery very, very seldom works. In fact, the chance of a spine fusion, for instance, helping chronic back pain is less than 25%.
You don't like performing surgery. How come?
Well, first of all, what we found out is we calmed down the nervous system. Somehow it raises the pain threshold. And even with significant structural problems that ordinarily I would do surgery on, and I'm very, very conservative, we have over 30 patients now over the last 2 years that have gone to pain-free. So they come in for the preoperative visit. We get ready to do their surgery, and they say, well, you know something? I feel pretty good. And it's exciting because I had a person come in today, same thing, where he had gone through the program 3 months, 6 months, nothing seemed to happen, lost track of him. And he came in today just beaming, excited, new job, new relationship, new whatever. So the fun part for me is that it's not just that the pain drops, the anxiety drops, and you don't need the surgery. And so we've had a wonderful time rehabbing people. And if we do the surgery, when people's anxiety drops, the results are just spectacular. We just had the best time with this.
Tell me a little bit about the spine and the nervous system within the spine, David.
Well, the spinal column has 7 cervical vertebrae in the neck, has 12 thoracic vertebrae and 5 lumbar vertebrae. The vertebrae get increasingly larger as you come down towards the pelvis. What's interesting is that humans walk on 2 feet. So instead of walking on 4s, which would give you a nice arch to your back that would suspend your body is really supported just by a column where the chest is connected to the pelvis by just one column of bone. And it's not very stable. If you strip away the muscles from around the spine, the whole spine collapses at about 10 pounds of support. So it really requires a huge amount of muscular support around the spine to support it. That's why it's so easy to exceed the pain threshold, because the column collapses inherently, and you've got to have tight muscles to support it. Otherwise, you're going to consistently keep stressing it, causing pain. So it's a very unstable column by itself without the muscles around it.
When you developed your program, how did you do that?
Well, I had chronic pain myself for about 15 years. I would say 7 of those years were extreme. I had no idea what was going on. And I developed what's called a mind-body syndrome, which means your body is stressed out, is anxious. My body's adrenaline was up. I was frustrated. I was trapped. I had no hope. I had no way out of the hole. And I just started doing these simple exercises, which simply writing things down that are negative and throwing them away. I came across that by pure luck. And the first time in 15 years, things started to break up. And within about 6 weeks, I was better. By 6 months, I was really almost pain-free. And that happened in about 2004, after being in chronic pain since about 1990. And I've been pretty much pain-free since. It's been a very interesting process. So I started sharing these tools with my patients, and I didn't really understand it very well. Some things worked, some things didn't. But I'd say over the last 6 years, we've seen hundreds of patients go absolutely pain-free. So it's not about managing the pain. These pain pathways are permanent, but you can shift. You can shift off the pain pathways into a different set of pathways. It's based on a concept called neuroplasticity, where we actually can change the shape of the brain. And we know in chronic pain, people's brains actually shrink. And when you treat chronic pain, people's brains actually re-expand.
I have found that I sleep on a certain bed. I sleep a number bed, and it's made a world of difference for me in terms of any kind of back issues. How important is it for you to have the right mattress, for example, when you're sleeping?
Well, I think it's important for your personal comfort. What I've not found is a specific formula for mattress. In other words, people advertise mattresses for specific back problems. They'll solve your back problems. And Again, if for you it's comfortable and it does feel better, that is the mattress for you. But I don't think there's a specific hardness or type of mattress that actually is helpful. But I do think getting the right mattress for you so you can sleep is critical. And it's an interesting relationship because I do think there's some mechanical implications to that. We also know that sleep is number one. If you're not sleeping, the entire project is completely null and void. It just doesn't work. So sleep by far and away is the biggest factor. They actually can cause chronic pain in people by just depriving them of stage five or dream sleep. So within about 10 days, if you deprive volunteers of just dream sleep, within 10 days, all of them develop back pain.
How did you get involved in this in the first place?
Well, when I came to Seattle, well, first of all, I started out in internal medicine, so I think a little differently. I think the most surgeons, just because of a medical background. Then I spent time with the rehab doctors, two or three friends of mine that taught me about the different parts of physical therapy, stretching, strengthening, et cetera. So I quickly developed a different perspective, and I noticed pretty quickly, even almost 30 years ago now, that the patients that went through the rehab doctors first just simply did a lot better. And so then I started working with them, started doing some of the things with them. And combining the rehab with the surgery just made a huge difference, and people just did much better. Then again, I went into chronic pain myself, and when I started sharing those tools with my patients, people that I never, ever thought would get better have been getting better. So it's a combination of medical training, the rehab doctors, my own experience. It sort of evolved over time. I did not get the training in medical school, which is actually one of our problems right now, is we're simply not taught about chronic pain at early on in our career.
You've talked about an interesting statistic, David, and that statistic is, of course, having to do with people. 80,000 people found new jobs, but 85,000 went on disability. That's astronomical.
Right.
What causes that?
Huge problem right now. Now, keep going back to this concept of mental pain and physical pain being processed in the same part of the brain, is that right now there's just an epidemic of anxiety. We know in the pediatric or teenage population that the incidence of chronic pain has gone up over 800% within 10 years. It's huge. And people are stressed out. And again, when people are under a lot of stress, the pain threshold changes. And I honestly, personally, through my own experience and through my patients' experience, I'm not sure what comes first. I don't know if the anxiety comes first or the pain comes first, but they're so interrelated, it's unbelievable. So there's a lot of stress in this planet. And so not only is it that way, that was July of this year, about that 85,000 going on disability versus new jobs, it's actually been that way every month for the last 3 years. So it's an unsustainable problem. So we're getting this epidemic of anxiety and disability coming down the pike, and it's going to get way, way worse. I see lots of people in their late teens and 20s now with a lot of chronic pain. When they really hit the workforce over the next 10 years, they're going to buckle. They really are not going to be able to handle the stress of the workforce.
How many people are addicted to pain pills, David?
Well, in a given practice across the country right now, there's some big data in Washington, is that over half of our patients that go to spine surgery are on high-dose medications. And addiction is a funny term. You become dependent on medications because nothing else seems to work. A true addiction is relatively rare. That's a psychological thing where you're just demanding the drug like a heroin addict, et cetera. And that does happen. But people do get on high-dose pain medications. Of course, they demand more. The body builds up a tolerance. But what's remarkable, what we found out the last 5 years, is that if you are on over 100 milligrams of a morphine equivalent per day, the body's sensitivity to pain goes up dramatically. It's unbelievable. So we have lots of patients now that would take off medications completely, and their pain gets much, much better.
What do you recommend? Just a common aspirin or what?
Well, it's tricky. I mean, my process is a little different. I want to really calm people's pain down first. So I get them some sleep. We will go through these exercises to calm down the nervous system. We'll work on some slight stretching, strengthening, et cetera. And then what happens, people's pain really starts to drop. And I've had people on over 1,000 milligrams of oxycodone a day come off medications absolutely completely.
No pain. What were they, walking zombies?
They were fine. But see what happens, your body builds up such a tolerance, you actually don't feel drowsy at all.
That's unbelievable. Just a little bit would have knocked me out.
Right.
Can't you have a heart attack, though, when you're taking that much?
Well, it's not a heart attack issue. It's more mostly a breathing issue. What narcotics do, it causes what's called respiratory depression, where you quit breathing. And there's a drug called methadone. It's a very long-acting drug. It's got what's called a half-life of 30 hours. It takes 30 hours for it to decrease. So when you take that next dose, you've actually added on to the prior dose. I wish I had the exact number in front of me, but in the state of Washington, more people die of narcotic overdoses than do in car accidents. It's a huge, huge problem around the country.
You know, I can see that. Do you think, a little controversial here, is it over-prescribed, these pain pills?
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't want to criticize the medical profession. It's a combination of things. Right now, we really are not taught about chronic pain in medical school, residencies or fellowships, and people they're in pain. And I think it's the medical profession's efforts to use narcotics to solve the problem. So they're dramatically overprescribed. But again, it's, I think, medicine's efforts to do the best they can with a considered impossible problem.
If somebody is in such chronic pain and they want to do themselves in, how do you feel about that as a doctor?
Well, I think the whole thing's tragic because really what happens, believe it or not, I mean, if somebody engages, there's about 25 of us around the country in medicine that are doing this process of calming down the nervous system, rerouting the pathways, is incredibly solvable 90 to 95% of the time. So if somebody has a terminal illness with metastatic tumors to the spinal cord, et cetera,
yeah,
I think most people in medicine think that's fine. There's no reason to do yourself in with chronic pain, but the problem is people do. The suicide rate in chronic pain is horrendously
high. It's huge.
Yeah. It's huge. So I don't blame people. I actually have to tell you I was close to that myself, so I get it. But it's an incredibly solvable problem. So it's the good news and sort of the tragedy. The problem's so incredibly solvable with some very simple tools, yet we do these massive operations that actually don't need to be done. It really is a tragedy.
How quickly do you see results with people when you start working with them?
Well, let me tell you a couple of stories. I had one gentleman who had fractured his spine 10 years ago. He had a lot of pain with that. He had a second operation, which made the pain worse. He came to me, he's about 60 years old. He came to me for a third opinion. They had recommended a spine fusion clear from his neck all the way through his pelvis. I looked at his films and go, you know something, your spine looks pretty good to me. I said, look, there's some simple tools. Take a look at my book. Start these simple writing exercises. Simply write down negative thoughts and throw them away. We can talk about that in a second. And he started writing that night. He didn't really believe me, of course. He's a scientist, and he goes, this is crazy, but he tried it. And for the first time the next morning, he woke up with about 20% decrease in his pain. The second day, 50%. By the fourth day, he was about 80% free of pain. And I've known him for a bit. About 4 months later, he's been pain-free, riding his horses, doing just fine. And we see stories like that pretty frequently. Usually it's about 3 to 6 months about where people start really getting a lot better. A lot of times within a few weeks, people start to improve.
That's pretty dramatic. I mean, dramatic, isn't it?
Well, it's hard for me to watch because I get to see this story all the time, yet I'm a salvage surgeon. So probably a third of my practice has dealt with people that have had these endless operations that they actually didn't need the first one in the first place. So a contrast to the story is another woman that we took care of here recently where she'd had back pain and she had a fusion, a second fusion. To make a long story short, she has had something like 8 fusions over 10 years.
Ouch.
She is fused from her neck to her pelvis. She, of course, is completely disabled, horrible chronic pain. That's the story I see pretty much every day in my office right now, 1 to 3 times every day. I see people with major, major surgeries that really cause much worse pain, and it's horrible. So I get to see that every day, yet I get to see the other story every day also. So
we're going to take some calls, David, with you. We're going to hit the break, but we're going to come back and have folks share their stories of their situation with you. Well, we're going to take your calls with Dr. David Hanscom as we talk about back in control, the pain you go through. Share some of your stories and questions for him as well. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. David Henscombe with us. We'll take some calls here with you as well. David, the break got us. You were talking about this woman who you had been treating. Now, is this the one that was confined to a wheelchair?
Well, that story is incredibly tragic. What happened, we had a woman who had been in a wheelchair for 20 years. We did two major spine surgeries on her. She did the rehab. She came off over 1,200 milligrams of oxycodone a day to pain-free. She was out of the wheelchair most of the time, but she's still been over, probably 20 degrees. And she was being a grandmother. She was losing weight, working out. She wanted to be completely straight. We did one final operation that went beautifully. We got her absolutely straight. And about 3 weeks later, she died. She went into lung failure, and she died. So it's been one of the most devastating things in my career because she was an incredible story. We actually shot a TV special on her. She was so fantastic. So, yeah, pretty devastating.
That does happen, though, doesn't it? It's sad, but it happens.
Right. Yeah. Again, the tragedy was, 20 years ago, she had a series of operations that she absolutely did not need. So, really, she lost 20 years of her life in a wheelchair with really a problem that could have been treated very easily without surgery. And then the final deal here was just obviously incredibly tragic.
What's it cost generally for an operation on the spine?
Well, a spine fusion is the one that gets people in trouble. There's about, I'm looking at the data right now, 2008, the medical bill for the United States was something like $33 billion. I didn't realize it was that high. So it's billions of dollars spent per year. So a given spine operation is between $50,000 to $100,000.
Wow. And how long are you under for something like that? 3, 4, 5 hours?
Well, I did a surgery yesterday, which was 7 hours. But normally, if it's a one-level or two-level fusion, it's anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. But when they get complicated, in other words, I'm one of those revision surgeons. I take care of people who've had 5 or 10 operations before they get to me.
Yeah, okay.
And they're complicated because it's lots of scar tissue. So those can be 6, 7, 8, 10 hours.
I mean, if somebody's had 5 or 10 operations, they've got to be depressed, aren't they?
Absolutely, right. It took me a long time to figure this out. I would do these huge operations. They were very successful. People would be perfectly straight, and their anxiety would be up. Their depression would be still present, and their pain would still be there. We'd do these perfect operations, and they wouldn't work at all. It's like phantom limb pain, where you have to amputate somebody's leg, and the leg still hurts. We would do these back operations, and their back would still hurt. So not only would they go through these huge operations, their pain would be the same or worse.
What do you think of medicinal marijuana for people who are in pain as well, and they can't take pain pills?
I just talked to a friend of mine a few minutes ago about that, who's a pain specialist, and he's reviewed 33 research papers. And we don't know. It's certainly maybe safer than narcotics. I honestly don't know the answer to that question where everybody's talking about it. I think it's going to be a dosing issue, where there's edibles versus you inhale versus pills. So I think really the dosing issue may be the biggest issue that we're going to deal with next. So there's probably a place that has to be determined yet.
Let's go to Steve in St. Louis now, east of the Rockies. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. I suffered a back injury in 2008. I blew out disc in my fourth and fifth lumbar. And I had a neurosurgeon who operated, and somehow he got a virus in my back, which put about a ping pong sized hole in my spine.
Oh.
And ever since then, they cut out a piece of rib and covered it up. But ever since then, I can't stand more than about 10 minutes rinsing off dishes and putting them in a drawer dishwasher. And walking up and down stairs is terrible. And I fell a couple of weeks ago, and I'm to the point now that I'm getting afraid to walk.
Right. Is this whole, is this like an open wound in your back, or is the wound closed now?
When they cut out this section of rib on my left side and put it there to replace the part of the spine that was eaten away by the virus, it has sealed up.
Okay. And when you had the surgery before, was it mostly for back pain you had the surgery? What was the reason for the surgery in the first place?
The neurosurgeon went in there and was going to clip off the edges of the disc that were sticking out, causing the problem, and he messed it up. And I wound up having to go have somebody else put a piece of my rib in the back to seal this off.
So is the question what you want to do now with your back? Is that the question now, or what's your question exactly?
How can I get rid of this pain?
Get rid of the pain there, David.
Right. So here's the problem. Well, we have found out that actually the source of the pain doesn't matter. Whether it's a structural problem or a complication of surgery like you had, it's a huge problem. Again, that's why I spend so much time trying to talk people out of any surgery. It's quite common. There's about a 10 to 40% chance of actually making pain worse with any surgery, especially a spine fusion. So your story, I heard three of those stories today of people having back surgery, and they're way worse after the surgery. So the problem is when you're in pain and trapped, you get very frustrated. You're not enjoying this, obviously. Then your body's adrenaline levels elevate, which then magnifies the signal. So that's where this process of looking, there's three parts to getting better. You first of all have to understand that chronic pain is different than acute pain. There's a bunch of things that affect pain. There's
And what is that difference, David, chronic and acute?
Well, like we talked about earlier, why the chronic pain lives in a different part of the brain, actually lives in the emotional center. So the pain gets mixed up with anxiety and anger. They just get connected. So it's not psychological. It's just an intersection of pathways. So what happens is that pain goes up, anxiety goes up, anger goes up. But unfortunately, when anger goes up, it gets linked to pain. So you get these things going back and forth like a ping pong game. So what you have to do, the more legitimate your anger, which obviously you have a very strong reason to be frustrated, you're trapped, you're bounced around, there's no way out of the hole, and what do? So once you understand chronic pain, you find out which variables are pertinent to you, then you have to treat every one of them at the same time. And then the third part of it is you take control of your own care. In other words, you call the shots. So the first step by far and away is simply learn about pain, understand your situation in relationship to that pain. And again, we've seen many, many patients just like yourself go absolutely pain-free. It doesn't seem possible at this minute. I'm not trying to minimize your pain at all. I mean, I was there myself, and it's a huge problem, so I feel horrible for you. But it is pretty solvable, believe it or not.
Okay, thanks for that, and good luck to you. It's not easy. It really isn't. Walter in Grand Island, Nebraska, you're up with the doctor. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me all right?
Sure can, Walt. Sure.
Okay. The question I had for the doctor was, I have something called osteogenesis imperfecta. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I wrote my original research paper on osteogenesis imperfecta. When I was in Minneapolis Spine Fellow, I wrote a major paper on that whole topic, so I know it extremely well.
Okay. I've had it all my life. I've had in the area of about 70 different breaks.
Right.
And I broke my back 4 or 5 different times. And right now I'm on hydrocodone. I've been on that for about, I suppose, 10-12 years. And it's getting where nothing really works anymore, and I'm getting so depressed. I mean, I just feel like I just want to kick myself off the edge of the earth some day, because, you know, you don't want to get up. You don't want to try to do this or do that. Do you have any suggestions? I've never had any surgeries or anything, so...
So how severe is your... By the way, for the listening audience, osteogenesis imperfecta is a inherited disease of the bone, where the bones are incredibly fragile, and people have dozens, sometimes hundreds of fractures around their entire body. And so it's a congenital osteoporosis or congenital softening of the bone. So your situation is tough because you do have a structural issue that's quite significant in addition to the chronic pain issues. But again, the same problem is that you've had... How old are you now? Can I ask how old you are?
I'm only 50.
You're 50? Okay. And you've had this... You've had pain your whole life, correct?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I've had everything. Like I was saying, about 70 different breaks, both arms, both legs. I've had screws. I've broke my back 4 different times. Last accident I just had about 6 months ago, I was in the hospital for almost 4 weeks because of about 20 different breaks I got out of the hospital. and my dog knocked me down my back patio steps, and I broke my ankle completely off away from my body, so they had to operate on that.
Yeah, I mean, this situation is really, really tough. But again, the same issue here where, again, you do have pain that's structural. It's a big problem. And your situation is even tougher because your nervous system has been assaulted by pain impulses for so many years. The encouraging part, we have found out that we have people, it doesn't matter how long you've had the pain, that you can still minimize the response. Again, as you get frustrated, your body's adrenaline levels go up, which magnifies the signal. So again, by using some of these calming down techniques, relaxation techniques, there's some writing exercises, et cetera, working on sleep, et cetera, where you can actually decrease the pain quite a bit. I'm not sure your situation can go to pain-free like we see lots of people go to, but we've been surprised. It's been surprising. Do you have scoliosis in your back? In other words, is your spine curved in addition to the fractures, or is your spine pretty straight?
Basically, it's sort of straight. It's curved just a bit, not a bunch, from the breaks that I've had.
So the one thing, there's a temptation for the surgeons to actually take a disease like yours and do these major spine fusions. That's one thing that will not work. That's the part that gets to be in trouble in this modern era, is that people are just, instead of doing just 1 and 2 level fusions for back pain, we're doing like 8 and 10 level fusions. And
right.
They just don't work. And so the chances of a spine fusion working for the pain would be very, very low. But yeah, I would encourage you to look at the book. The website's the action plan of the book is backincontrol.com with a hyphen between the words. It's back-in-control.com. So there's a 5-stage process to go through over the course of a year, and I think you'd be remarkably surprised how well it could, you know, drop your pain down quite a bit.
Gee, what percent people, David, are out there with chronic pain? It's got to be huge.
Well, the data that we keep hearing is 116 million Americans, and of course it gets to be a debate, you know, how do you define chronic pain, et cetera. So we're estimating anywhere from 25 to 40% of the population has chronic pain. But there's also things like chronic disease, like, for instance, Parkinson's disease is one we see commonly. 60% of people with Parkinson's have chronic pain. So not only do you have a really disturbing neurological problem, then you've got the chronic pain as an added insult to that. So chronic disease in general affects, it's got to be almost half the population if you include chronic disease in addition to chronic pain.
Let's go to Toronto, Canada now, where I'll be this weekend. Mike is with us, east of the Rockies. Michael, go ahead.
How you doing there, George?
Good, Mike.
Sorry, I won't be here. I'll be out in Edmonton. I'm picking up a load today.
Ah, well, that's okay.
I wanted to come and see you. Anyways, David, I was a sufferer for 25 years of chronic lower back pain. And in 2010, I was in a wreck. George and I had talked about my wreck before.
Yeah.
And I started seeing a psychologist for 2.5 years weekly.
Okay.
We were looking for a drug to go hand in hand with the treatment my psychologist was giving me. But he started me on Prazosin for the anxiety and the PTSD.
Okay.
And it magically got rid of my lower back pain.
Right.
And whenever I talked to my psychologist, he told me when he was doing his internship, he suffered lower back pain. But whenever he became a clinical psychologist and he wasn't doing all that stuff, he said his lower back pain went away as well.
Right.
But my doctor got that information directly from my colleague that treats war veterans from Canada that come back to Trenton and are being treated for post-traumatic stress disorder from what they've been exposed to overseas.
Right.
And Prazosin, 1 milligram, I call it my magic pink pill.
So I'm going to get in a lot of trouble with my medical colleagues in this one. So I agree with what you did. In other words, anxiety drives pain drives anxiety, and you have to break the cycle. So 20% of my entire project is medication. So at one time, as this process evolved, I was the number one prescriber of Xanax in the state of Idaho. And if you have anxiety, these anti-anxiety medications are incredibly effective. Now, in the chronic pain world, the benzodiazepams have become really negatively labeled. I think that's incorrect. So if you have migraine headaches, you take migraine medications. If you have anxiety, you take anti-anxiety medications. Because what's happening, your brain's being assaulted by pain impulses. It's being assaulted by anxiety impulses. And to get the process to work, you got to give yourself a break. So, for instance, with pain medications, I take those things off last. These people have weaned off medications of over 1,000 milligrams. I didn't do it. They did it themselves. So as their pain dropped down, the medications dropped. As their anxiety dropped, they came off the medications. So I think your story is very dead on. And so we are treating the pain, or it's actually anxiety. I actually wrote a website post, am I operating on your pain or your anxiety? And probably the biggest paradigm shift, George, has happened to me since I talked to you last, is I finally figured out that a lot of times people are asking me to do surgery. What's intolerable is not the pain, it's the anxiety. And as I calm people's anxiety down, that's when the pain has disappeared. It's been absolutely shocking to me as a surgeon to watch this happen, because I'm not trained that way. I'm trained as a mechanic, right? So the idea that anxiety and pain were that linked has just blown me away.
Jeez. Well, I got to tell you, David, what you do, the service you provide to people just to help them get out of this pain situation. You know, I've never really had chronic pain before, so I don't really get what they're going through, but it's got to be horrible, David.
Well, one of the gifts, I use that word tongue-in-cheek, because I probably would not accept this gift again, is I was in chronic pain myself for 15 years, and I would call 7 of those years absolutely intolerable, and I just about did not make it through, seriously. And it's unbelievable. I didn't know what hit me. I didn't know why it hit me. And the suffering is just unbelievable. And the problem is there's no hope. I mean, nobody tells you what to do. No one knows where to go. And you're trapped. You're incredibly trapped. You just don't know what to do. So I tell my patients, they look at me and they don't really believe me, but I say, look, you might be suffering as much as I did, but not more. No human being can suffer as much as I did for that long and get through it. So I'll grant you, you might be suffering equally to what I went through, but not more. So I do get it. I've been there. I've been there for a long time. The pain pathways are permanent. If I quit doing my own tools that I teach to my patients within about 2 to 4 weeks, some of my symptoms come back. So no, I've been in the trenches for a long, long time. And that is a gift. That's why I'm so anxious to pass it on. It's my way of giving something back.
Well, good for you. And your website, of course, always available to people, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. David, your book, Back in Control. David, I've got every phone line lit. Can you stay about one more hour with us?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to do that. And if you need to just track us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, that's very simple, by going to coasttocoastam.com. Always take your emails at george@coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, our executive producer, Lisa Lyons, she'll take your emails, too. You'll find hers on our website as well. So let's come back in a moment with final calls with Dr. David Hanscom, the author of Back in Control, A Spine Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. I know this is not paranormal, but it's important. You should see the calls that are coming into our office. We'll be back.